Hello. Thank you so much for joining me. This is Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse, hoping that you are feeling excellent and healthy today as we start off on another adventure right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And many of you have been visiting our website at naturalnurse.com and leaving your comments, or on Facebook, The Natural Nurse. That's another place that you can interact with us. And of course, we're giving local lectures all over in the New York area, in the Florida area. We'll be in California, Massachusetts, all over the country. And how you can find out is just go to naturalnurse.com and click on schedules. While you're there, you may also want to visit our book area by going to naturalnurse.com and clicking on books. And you will see that Dr. Zamprone and myself have written a long list of books that tell you how to take care of yourself and your family the natural alternative way. And one of the books is called The Natural Guide to Great Sex. And in that venue, we have our guest today, and that is Dr. Jennifer Landa, who is a medical doctor. She completed her internship and residency at Beth Israel Medical Center, which is right here in New York. For those of you who are listening in New York, of course, we have listeners all over the country. And Dr. Landa was distinguished as the administrative chief resident in obstetrics and gynecology. She is also a wife, mother, and a physician whose friendly, humorous, accessible style has made her a favorite with patients seeking solutions for health issues from PMS, baby blues, low libido, hot flashes for our power women who are more like my age. She talks about weight gain, menopausal mood swings, and more. And after a decade working as a conventional OBGYN, Dr. Jen realized she wanted to learn more for her patients and herself. So she spent additional years becoming board certified in regenerative medicine, with an emphasis on bioidentical hormones and nutrition. She specializes in helping women and men restore their energy, their sex lives, and improve health and lifestyle issues related to weight management, nutrition, and exercise. Dr. Jen often prescribes nutritional supplements and bioidentical hormones, like I think all physicians should, as well as teaching her patients how to embrace a new sexual paradigm. Dr. Jen is also the chief medical officer of Body Logic MD. And if you want to find them, you want to go to bodylogicmd.com. On today's show, Dr. Landa discusses her inspiring new book, The Sex Drive Solution, where she outlines the what, the why, and the how of losing libido and shares some creative ways to get it back. So thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Landa.
Thanks so much for having me, Ellen.
And your book is beautiful. I love the cover, The Sex Drive Solution. Dr. Jen's Power Plan. It's a sexy cover.
Thank you. And thank you so much for that warm introduction. But yeah, I just fell in love with that picture for the cover, and I felt like that really expressed what I wanted people to get out of the book, that they can get that fire and sexiness back into their sex life, whether it's in the kitchen or anywhere else.
And your presentation throughout the book is something that people can really find helpful. Of course, it's best to work with a holistic physician, someone trained like yourself, but even for a lot of self-care, there's great information here, and it's easy to read.
Thank you. I really appreciate that, Ellen, because that's really what I wanted to do with this book. You know, I wholeheartedly agree with you that it's best, if you can, to work with a practitioner who is open to bioidentical hormones and supplements and all of the various stuff that we talk about in the book. But, you know, if you're not able to find somebody in your area or you're not quite ready to do that yet, you know, I felt like the book is a great way to introduce those concepts, because I think there's still a lot of people out there who really don't know that this all is available to them and that there are safer hormonal options that are available.
Well, that is important. Let's go back in time a little bit, because you are highly trained in conventional medicine. And what was the normal protocol that, especially women, as they got into their later years and their hormone levels started coming down, they were always prescribed conventional hormone replacement therapy. And just a vast number of women were put on that.
Absolutely, yeah. When I did my training back in the late 90s, I was actually told that we needed to prescribe traditional hormone replacement therapies, and I was told this so emphatically by our chief of OBGYN that I was actually told that if a woman that I was treating, a menopausal woman, had a heart attack and I had not documented on her chart that I had offered her hormone replacement therapy, that I was committing malpractice. That's what I was actually taught.
Wow. So in other words, it was like the standard of care, and you were mandated to follow it more or less.
As a matter of fact, exactly that. We were mandated to follow the protocol of offering traditional hormone replacement therapy. And, you know, sort of what you asked is a great question, because it really leads me to one of the things that, when looking back on my traditional training and now seeing it sort of in a different light, you know, it was a very formulaic way of practicing medicine. It was, if a woman had hormone problems and came into me and she was still having periods, basically my only option was to give her a hormone replacement in the form of a birth control pill. And if that woman had crossed the threshold into menopause, basically wasn't having periods anymore, then she was given a cocktail of traditional hormone replacement therapy, mainly Prempro. And that was pretty much that. You know, it was very much a formula. You know, A plus B equals C, and that's the way that you do it. And it didn't really involve a lot of individualization at all, which is what's so great about what I do now, which, as you were saying, you wish all doctors would do. Having the options of more individualization and customization with bioidentical hormone replacement therapy.
And why I prefer that as an approach is because that is what is evidence-based.
Absolutely. You are absolutely correct about that. And the amazing part is that I'm a traditionally trained OBGYN, and as a traditionally trained OBGYN, of course, I was trained to use the drugs that were available through the pharmaceutical companies, some of which actually are bioidentical, but most of what was pushed was actually the non-bioidentical, which would be things like Prempro and there's multiple different types of estrogen on the market, but I think the biggest problem is that they're very often combined with an artificial form of progesterone known as a progestin. And that's an artificial form, like I said, of progesterone, which we use because it has a very good effect in the uterus. It does actually prevent uterine cancer, so that's its good side. But it has a really pretty bad side, as a matter of fact, that I really review a lot in the book. And a lot of women who've taken that hormone, progestin, would be able to tell you right off the bat the number of side effects that they've experienced from it. Anything from mood difficulties to acne to water weight gain, breast tenderness, you could go on and on. There's a humongous list. And the main reason why is because it's not the same hormone that's in our body naturally.
Now, why is there a resistance, do you think, in mainstream medicine for this approach?
You know, I think there's a multitude of reasons. I think the biggest reason, though, is that, you know, being sort of, again, like I said, on sort of the other side of things now, or at least a different side kind of on the outside looking in, you know, a lot of the traditional medical experience and medical training is really with an eye to what pharmaceutical companies, you know, are sort of push on us. You know, they come in all the time to our offices, give us samples of what's new, and they, you know, review the data on their particular product. And really, you know, in the defense of doctors, there is so much medical data out there, so much scientific knowledge to be had and to be sorted through every month when the journals come out, that a lot of doctors actually, you know, wind up relying on the pharmaceutical representatives to go through that data for them and to present them with the pertinent studies. And of course, the studies that are being presented in the typical doctor's office are the ones that will support whichever drug it is that the representative is selling that day. And so with what you think is reasonable medical experience and medical knowledge and good scientific literature, you're making these treatment decisions. Now, of course, bioidentical hormones, on the other hand, are not patentable because anything that exists in nature cannot be patented. So because bioidentical hormones aren't patentable and there's no drug company really that stands to make a large amount of money from it, there's no representative. There's no pharmaceutical representative coming to your office telling you about the fact that it would be safer and more effective to use bioidentical hormones, which, of course, are the hormones that are exactly the same as what's in our body naturally. But it
that
makes
sense. A great explanation, excellent explanation. I want to share with you one of my little biases. First of all, in your beautiful book, I do want to talk about how you begin the book, because you do talk about a history of sex and cultural norms and what people, you know, perceive as sexiness, and so many people lose their libido as they age. But I want to make one little definition that I like to use, because while you're talking about traditional medicine, I would like to call that during our show today either conventional medicine or allopathic or modern, because I think what you're talking here about in terms of the history and the natural replacement, especially when we talk about herbs and nutrients, let's call that traditional. It's a confusing little nuance that I'm just a stickler about, because since I've worked so many years in this field since 1964 and I travel around the world and I've lived with indigenous cultures and brought back natural therapies which are now widely used in conventional medicine, you know, some things when herbs are being integrated into their protocol. So just as a little aside, because I think you have a fabulous section here on the traditional sort of history of the perception of sexuality, which is just great. Why don't we go into that a little bit? You have this great section about, you know, some of the history of the Hebrews and, you know, the nuclear family and the fact that, you know, they're talking a lot about now because Mitt Romney is a Mormon, and I'm not saying that he has many wives, but that is the belief structure in that society. So these things are change a lot according to what the societal norm is.
Absolutely. Well, I'm glad that you made that distinction, because I think that is an important distinction. That, and you're right that modern medicine or conventional medicine is actually a very short time in our history, and the history, of course, of medicine and treating with all different kinds of modalities dates back way before conventional medicine. And so I like your definition and your particular way of defining that there. So I'll go along with that, certainly.
Yeah, and you actually do. You actually do in all your writing and everything. You know, you're talking about some of the ancient traditions, the natural rhythms of a woman's body, which is so true. And I just love the way you talk about this, and you make it so clear. Like something like estrogen dominance. Let's talk about that, because it's so intimately linked to a wide range of things that people may find they have symptoms of.
Oh, yes. You know, it's really interesting. The average person who has hormonal problems seems quite common for women to think that what they have is a shortage of estrogen. And unfortunately, that doesn't really get helped anymore by doctors in conventional medicine, your conventional OBGYNs. Actually, a lot of them are pretty confused about it as well and think that their patients need estrogen before they've become menopausal, when actually it tends to be quite the opposite. What tends to happen as women age, and it starts, I would say, at around 30 years old, a lot of people are really surprised to know that the levels of progesterone that are quite robust in our 20s start to wane, even starting at about 30 years old. and it progresses over the course of the decade of the 30s and into the 40s, of course, where by the end of the 40s, the most common thing I see is kind of mid-40s women with such bad symptoms, and they have no idea what's going on because they haven't lost their period yet, so they're a little confused because they know they're not menopausal because, you know, of course, the traditional definition of menopause is a full year without menses. And so, but they know for sure that something is off with their hormones. And then they go to the doctor measures the hormones, and they say, no, everything's normal. So what we really need to talk about there is the drop of progesterone. Because progesterone is, I call it the unsung hero of hormones. Progesterone helps women sleep. It's the calming hormone. So it helps them be less overwhelmed. It also, though, helps with energy. It's kind of a balancing hormone. It helps with with memory. It helps with libido. And when progesterone goes down, then we get into a relative state where estrogen is dominant, meaning estrogen is not necessarily elevated from its norm. But when you talk about the balance between estrogen and progesterone, which I always say it's kind of like yin and yang, you know, you shouldn't have one without the other. And that's how it's meant to be in our cycles when we're young women. We have a natural ebb and flow of estrogen in the first half of the cycle, then ovulation, and then progesterone should be dominant in the second half of the cycle from ovulation till we menstruate. The problem is, as women age, this progesterone goes down, and then they become estrogen dominant during that period of the cycle. And that's what really leads to a lot of those negative symptoms that women tend to experience from ovulation to menses. Mainly people call it PMS, but it can be different in different women. And it can affect their energy, their mood, their libido. It can cause physical symptoms like breast tenderness and bloating. And the list goes on and on, really.
Now, isn't it, I know that you are well trained in what we might call functional medicine, and you have certificates. And, of course, once we've studied these things, medicine is much more complex. So I know that you even don't just test one kind of estrogen. You're considering a dance between the hormones. So it might not just be estradiol that a conventional physician would test, and that may actually appear normal when the person is having too much of it. But you might look at the interplay between such things as estrone, estriol, estradiol, progesterone, DHEA, DHEA sulfate, and even in men as well as women, testosterone.
Absolutely, Ellen. You know, I think probably one of the places I would start our conversation is to say that, number one, you're right, the hormones do a dance together, or, you know, what we call the symphony of hormones sometimes, that it's not going, you're not going to have beautiful music unless each piece is kind of working in concert with one another. And one place to maybe start that conversation is by talking about the adrenal glands, because the adrenal glands are responsible for making DHEA, as you mentioned, which is a mother hormone. We also make pregnenolone, which is a mother hormone. So our body makes all of these different hormones, estrogen, progesterone, cortisol, et cetera, all from the same hormone precursors. And so this estrogen dominance that I mentioned, a lot of times it will come from people whose adrenals are stressed. So when the body is busy making a lot of cortisol, we have to consider the fact that all of our hormones come from the same place. So if we're making a lot of cortisol, then we're robbing our body of other precious hormones, like progesterone is one of the first to go. Testosterone is another one. So whether it's a man or whether it's a woman, what I quite frequently see is people who are very stressed out, making lots of cortisol, which of course we know that cortisol has some negative effects when we make too much of it, like increasing our appetite for bad foods and causing fat deposition around the middle and all of that. And then we get the drop in the good hormones like progesterone and testosterone. And then we are in a complete state of imbalance, and we get into that estrogen dominance. And all of this has a huge effect on our libido.
Yes, and so that's, you know, I think people probably feel such a sense of relief and confirmation when they come to see you, and you say, you're not crazy. There is a measurable issue here. And they may say, but my other doctor or my other OBGYN just said everything's within normal limits, and yet you wouldn't feel that it was within normal limits.
That's absolutely true. I see that all the time, Ellen. First of all, I see people who say something kind of unusual. They say, thank goodness something is wrong with me.
Yes,
you know,
I get that all the time,
validated.
Too. But yeah, it's confirmational,
yeah.
though, because if you're told, oh, you're just crazy, or oh, you're just getting older when you're only 46, or something like that,
right.
you know.
Right, and so many of them have even been sent to psychiatrists and psychologists and told that their symptoms are in their head. Or told, you know, or the other doctor might throw up their hands and say, you know what, there's nothing wrong with you, there's nothing I can do, you just have to learn to live with this. And so, yes, for so many patients, it's so validating when they come in and they find out that there is actually an issue. And, you know, patients will ask me, so why didn't my other doctor find this, or why isn't my other doctor saying that? And, you know, one of the big issues, I think, is looking at hormones, like you said, that we look at many different types of hormones, including, like you said, the three different types of estrogens. Not only that, we even look at the breakdown of estrogens into its metabolites, so multiple different breakdown products of estrogen that we can look at.
Well, wait a minute. I don't want you to rush past that point.
Oh, okay.
Many listeners may never have heard about that. And, of course,
okay.
I know about it for years. You know about it for years. But you'd be amazed how that is very new information. And not only that, you get some very important information when you're looking at estrogen species.
Oh, yes. Very, 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 very important. I guess I would love to cover that. One thing I just want to say back to sort of what we were saying before, kind of on a more basic, and then we can dial down on it.
Excellent.
Is that what we look at in my field is what we would refer to as optimal level. So we're not just looking at, do you fall somewhere within the normal range? Because the normal range in a lot of hormones can be huge. And so if a patient falls at the very bottom of the normal range, but what was really optimal for them when they were younger was to be at the very high end of a range in a hormone, they're never going to feel good unless you get them back up to that top end. So that's, I think, an important distinction that doctors who do it like I do and nurses who look at it like you do, we look at the upper end a lot of times, the top one-third maybe, as the optimal range of a hormone. And then we have to look at the balance of that hormone with other hormones for everything, for people to really feel as well as they possibly can.
And that's back to what you shared with that individualization, where you're really looking at the person, you know, what's best for them. And we're going to take just a one-minute break. This time is going so quickly, Dr. Landa. But I do want to talk about the different species of estrogens when we got back. And then we're going to continue to talk about the wonderful tips that you have in your book, The Sex Drive Solution for Women, Dr. Jen's Power Plan to Fire Up Your Libido. And I'm sure by now you know it's a complex topic, and Dr. Landa's book brings it to you in a very easy to understand and user-friendly form. So we're going to take a little break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, and when we come back, we'll continue our discussion with Dr. Jennifer Landa, MD, the Sex Drive Solution for Women. For joining us today, this is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse. You can always find us at naturalnurse.com, myself and Dr. Eugene Zamperone, and we co-host The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And we have as our guest today Dr. Jennifer Landa. And as you can see, Dr. Landa is extremely knowledgeable in OBGYN, which she is certified in, and she even had an internship and residency at Beth Israel Medical Center. But as she has progressed in her life, she has become board certified in regenerative medicine with an emphasis on bioidentical hormones and nutrition. So thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Landa, on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And I do want to mention your book again, The Sex Drive Solution, which has lots of the information that we're talking about today. So let's go back to where we left off, where we're going to talk about some of the deeper testing you might do looking at estrogen species in an individual.
Sure, Ellen. The testing that you're referring to frequently is done in urine, actually, where we can look at a whole host of what I would call estrogen metabolites or breakdown products. The way that we each individually break down estrogens is actually seeming to be very, very important when we look at risk of breast cancer and risk of all kinds of other symptoms that too much estrogen may lead to, including endometriosis, fibroid tumors, things like that. And there's definitely individual genetic variations that we find that different people will take their estrogen and break it down in different ways to different estrogen breakdown products. And that's a process that happens through the liver, and that's called detoxification. And through this detoxification process, the body is trying to get the estrogen ready to be excreted. So the liver's job is to take things in the body, run it through some processes, and get it ready to be excreted. And the fact is that different people's livers will do this different ways. And that will cause different estrogens and different estrogen breakdown products to become more emphasized than others. So there's 2-hydroxyestrone, that is one of the breakdown products of estrogen that is considered to be a very safe estrogen breakdown product. That one is very easily neutralized and urinated out. Whereas when you look at 4-hydroxyestrones, those have been associated with DNA damage that could theoretically lead to breast cancer. And it's somewhat genetically determined whether you'll make more 2-hydroxy or 4-hydroxyestrone. But the good news is that even if the genetics aren't on your side, there are lifestyle choices and changes that you can make that will increase the formation of 2-hydroxyestrone over the 4-hydroxyestrone, which will certainly decrease your risk for breast cancer over time.
That's such good news. Always those lifestyle choices can really give us a great running start in terms of not getting some really bad illnesses like you just described. So it's so wonderful to find out about that. That's why I say this is cutting-edge medicine. This is how all medicine should be practiced. And in the long run, although they say something like this additional testing may have certain costs associated with it, very often it is certainly not as expensive as getting breast cancer, both to society and the individual. So it's actually a fabulous savings on every level.
Definitely. Definitely it is.
Now, I want to talk about things that you cover in your book, and how you have it laid out is in beautiful chart forms that are so easy for people to look at. So I want to talk about Chapter 7, Drugs That Sabotage Your Sex Life. And here you're talking about, for the most part, prescribed pharmaceutical medications.
Yes, there are any number of pharmaceutical medications that will do what I call sink your sex life. As a matter of fact, I just posted on my Facebook within the last 24 hours about selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, which to most people are called SSRIs, or people might know them as their trade names like Prozac and Zoloft and those types of medications. It's very interesting, but the balance of serotonin, one of our neurotransmitters, to dopamine, which is another neurotransmitter, the balance of serotonin and dopamine are very important in our sexual function. So while some people have a deficiency of serotonin, which can cause depression, unfortunately, a lot of people who get SSRIs prescribed for them don't actually have a deficiency in serotonin. So you increase a person's serotonin who already has normal serotonin, and then that overwhelms the dopamine and it causes them to have a decrease in their sex drive. But a lot of people don't ever think to put the two together, so they don't realize for years and years they're on this antidepressant and they have a poor libido. And a lot of people don't realize that the two are related, but I've had a number of patients who, for whatever reason, decide to get off of their SSRI. A lot of times I encourage them to do so when we get them on hormones and get them on supplements and things like that and improve their mood through a lot of natural methods. Then we're able to get them off the SSRI, and they notice a huge difference in their libido, their ability to orgasm, their sexual sensitivity goes up, all different kinds of things change, and that's just one example of a medication that can do that.
Isn't that wonderful? I really think that any responsible physician, their goal should be partnering with the patient and working diligently to get everyone off as many prescription medications as possible, instead of consistently moving forward by adding more and more of them on.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, unfortunately, and, you know, we don't want to get too deeply into this, but unfortunately, the medical system and what it's become is, you know, the average doctor's visit nowadays is 6 or 7 minutes. So it's really, you know, in the defense of doctors, it's very difficult to do anything other than hear the patient's complaint, write a script. Hear another complaint, write another script. It's much harder to get to the heart of problems and to really institute changes that will take care of multiple symptoms all at once. But I absolutely agree with you that the most important thing is to really try to get them off of medications, because medications have so many different side effects.
You know, another example. It is a partnering. It's a partnering.
Oh, it is. It is a partnering, absolutely.
Unless the patient will take the steps to, like you explained, through lifestyle and through other kinds of means to reverse those numbers so that the drugs can be decreased. It's a partnering.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I tell patients, you know, if you want to get off the medication, you're going to have to make the commitment with me to do the lifestyle change. Unfortunately, there are people, obviously, in our society who are all about the easy fix and just give me a pill. But the bottom line is there is nothing easy about that, because in the long run, you'll suffer many side effects and lose untold riches in your life, including sexuality, as we've talked about. And, you know, there's another example of that I want to bring out, because it's very personal to me. You may have read about in the introduction in my book, one of the reasons I'm so passionate about passion is because when I was 28, I actually lost my libido. And one of the biggest, looking back on it, one of the biggest reasons I lost my libido was the fact that I was on birth control pills. The interesting thing is I was an OBGYN resident at the time and studying all of, you know, everything that most, you know, conventional doctors know about hormones, and you know, I was supposed to be the one who was able to help myself, and I really had no idea what the problem was or how to fix it. And then one day I put together the fact that, oh, well, you know, when you take oral estrogen, it actually increases sex hormone binding globulin, which binds up your free testosterone. So therefore, birth control pills decrease a woman's free testosterone. And in many women, that really does cause their libido to take a nosedive. And so we're even talking about women in their 20s experiencing these drops in libido and not understanding why. And a lot of the reason can just be simply the fact that they're on a birth control pill.
That's so enlightening. And, of course, Dr. Jen, at that time in your life, how much stress was involved being a resident?
Well, that was the other big factor that I realized definitely was taking its toll. When I talked about before, the fact that, you know, when you're churning out tons of stress hormone, it's going to decrease your ability to make other hormones. So the amount of testosterone I was making in the first place is probably pretty low. And then the birth control pill on top of it compounded the matter, you know, in a huge way. And so that's what I've come to realize in the additional study that I've done, that the combination of stress and birth control pills are a sure libido sinker for a lot of people.
Now, I love your chapter 6 as well, my favorite libido boosting supplements and herbs. And you actually give very specific recommendations that people can read, let's say, on a nutritional supplement bottle about milligram amounts they should be looking for, forms of nutrients that might be best. Precautions are included in this chapter, as well as many of the herbs. This is excellent information for people.
Well, thank you. I'm glad that you enjoyed it. And yeah, you know, I really wanted people to have something to take away when they got this book, you know, that they're really able to walk away and put these things into practice. And, you know, and I want people to realize that, yet again, even with supplements, it's not, you know, the same thing that goes with medication goes with supplement. It's not about swallowing a pill that's going to solve all your problems. You know, the supplements are meant to be taken in the context of healthy lifestyle changes, which, you know, I review in the book as well. But the supplements can really be helpful for people. You know, the B vitamins, I think, are extremely important. All of that stuff we talked about before about how to get your estrogen to leave your body, detoxify in a healthy way. B vitamins are really important to that. And then there's a lot about supplements that increase blood flow, because sexuality isn't, you know, bottom line is all about blood flow. And if we don't have the blood flowing, we're not going to have the arousal and the lubrication and all of the stuff that goes on during the arousal phase of sexuality. And then other things that have been used, as you talked about, you know, in traditional medicine throughout the many, many years of tradition that has gone on, that, you know, there are many, many different herbs that have been used throughout the years.
Well, let's talk about some of them, because a bunch of these herbs, what I love about them, and this is back to that word traditional, for instance, if you're talking about Damiana, its mm-hmm. genus and species name is Ternera aphrodisiaca. Now, how would it get aphrodisiac in its name, one wonders? How do you feel about Damiana?
Well, you know, there's, of course, the traditional people, you know, indigenous people in Central and South America, they were the first to use it, and they used it as an all-purpose medicine, but they also noticed, of course, that it worked as an aphrodisiac. So that's how, I'm sure that's how it got its name.
Isn't that great? Yes.
Yeah, fantastic when things work like that, isn't it? And it seems like there is actually some modern scientific research to suggest that it can gently influence hormone levels in men and women, and that might help to aid arousal. Specifically, there's actually been shown that there's a part of this herb that acts in a way that's called aromatase, and that actually helps transform testosterone into estrogen. And so that may, in certain people, be just what they need to enhance their libido.
And I also like, in your precaution section, when you even start to get involved with the herbs, the fact that if you're going to start an herb, it's actually good to go slow, use, like you say, maybe only one or two new things at a time. So should you get some kind of reaction, you can know that it's linked to your beginning of that supplement. That's very good.
Absolutely. A lot of people take it for granted that, oh, it's a supplement, it can't hurt me. But people need to realize that supplements, a lot of, you know, supplements, of course, come from plants, and a lot of conventional medicines, I should say, also come from plants. You know, so plants can have a very strong medical effect, and they can raise blood pressure, they can raise blood sugar. So in people who are susceptible, they really need to pay attention to these precautions.
That's so true. Now let's go to another herb you talk about, which has another really kind of very sexy name, because that's Epimedium, which is called horny goatweed.
Yes, so horny goatweed, supposedly the story goes that it got its name from a goat herder noticing that the goats had more sexual activity after munching on this weed. So whether the story is true or not, that's the where it got its name from. And it actually, interestingly, works a lot like what we call PDE5 inhibitors, or drugs that are more commonly known as Viagra, Levitra, Cialis. Those all work by increasing nitric oxide. And nitric oxide is all about blood flow, like I mentioned before. If we can, basically, an erection in a man or in a woman, a lot of people might not realize that the tissues in a man and the tissues in a woman are very much analogous. They're almost, they're from the same embryological roots. So a man's penis and a woman's clitoris, it's very similar the way they act. And so there is erectile tissue in a woman's clitoris as well. And the erection really is very much reliant on blood flow. And if we're able to increase blood flow, then we can increase sexual lubrication and sexual stimulation and sensitivity. And that's what this horny goat weed does. It acts like one of these drugs to increase nitric oxide levels. Nitric oxide causes a relaxation of smooth muscle that's in the walls of the arteries, which allows in more blood flow.
That's an excellent description. And another one, I do want to cover ginkgo biloba because most people think of ginkgo in terms of memory, and yet you have ginkgo in your chapter on herbs that might be useful for sexual function.
Yes. Yeah, I know a lot of people do think of ginkgo as a memory herb, but it also can be very helpful in sexuality in several ways. One thing is ginkgo is very good for energy. If I've heard it once, I've heard it a thousand times. A lot of the reason that a lot of my women patients especially don't feel like having sex is because they're just tired. Their energy is at a low. So any herb that enhances energy, in my opinion, could theoretically be used for libido. But the ginkgo also has antioxidant effects, so it fights oxidation, and it improves the body's response to stress, which we talked about how stress is a sex killer as well. And ginkgo also does have an influence, again, on those nitric oxide levels, so it does increase blood flow. So it has sort of multiple different ways that it affects us sexually. And one thing to point out about it in particular is we talked about before how Zoloft and Prozac and all of those drugs can dampen your libido. Ginkgo is supposed to be especially helpful in the people who've lost libido as a side effect of antidepressant therapy. The ginkgo seems to be particularly helpful, at least in one study. It improved libido in women and men who've lost it from as a side effect of one of those medications.
That's a great description. Ginkgo is such an interesting plant because it often mirrors what's called the doctrine of signatures, where if we actually look at the structure of the leaf, it looks like the hemisphere of a brain. And like we said, one of the things it does is support brain function. But really because of the same mechanism of action which you just described, because it does increase circulation to the peripheral vasculature or the teeny little venules at the end of circulatory system. So one of the places that's at the end are the genitals as well as the brain and also the lungs. And ginkgo is often used as a lung herb in traditional Chinese medicine. So the more we look into the herbs, they have such a deep and varied history. And now, as you said, we're actually beginning to understand the mechanism of action by which they have their effects. So it's so great that you share this with your listeners in the book. Now, another section let's discuss, because I know it's very important to you, is lifestyle and food and nutrition and exercise. What does that have all to do with sex?
What doesn't it have to do with sex?
Exactly.
I know people don't think it might, but, you know, from listening to us, hopefully people are starting to gather that your hormone levels are dependent on a lot of different things, and lifestyle is a big part of that. So our hormone levels are affected every day by the food we eat, for instance. When we have periods of low blood sugar, for example, or high blood sugar, that affects all of our hormone levels in a big way. And so that can actually cause fluctuating blood sugar levels is one of the big things that I find causes a lot of stress on the body.
That's probably why you have this excellent glycemic index right in your book for people to follow.
Exactly. I talk a lot about the importance of blood sugar balancing and limiting the amount of sugar that you eat, because I really truly believe that sugar is more or less of a toxin. So from an anti-aging perspective, we want to avoid sugar. And when we eat sugar, you know, what comes up must come down. So when we get high blood sugar, then it's often followed by low blood sugar. That's a stress on the body. Stress is on the, when I talked about stress being a sex killer before, I don't only mean emotional stress. I also mean any kind of physical stress. And that fluctuation of blood sugar is a big physical stress that I see people go through that kills their energy. It's a lot of the reason why a lot of people have that low time at around 2 to 4 p.m. They're tired, they're reaching for sugar, they're reaching for caffeine. All of that stuff does not play out well sexually. So I really recommend that strongly. And also we talked about how important antioxidants are and blood flow, et cetera, et cetera. What we eat every day, I call it food is medicine in my opinion. And what we put in our bodies every day tells our body how it should react. And if you eat junk, basically you're going to get junk as a result. You're going to get a junk result from your body. And if you eat healthy, high-quality foods, so that includes avoiding processed foods, eating foods like you find them in nature. I always say if your grandmother wouldn't have recognized it as food, don't eat it. You know, staying away from anything in a bag, a bottle, a can, frozen, et cetera, trying to eat fresh foods as much as possible. And trying to, I recommend spreading things out throughout the day, you know, having small frequent meals rather than large meals a few times a day, because that will really have those big effects on the blood sugar that we talked about.
Well, there is so much else to discuss in this book, Dr. Jen, but I would like to go into Body Logic MD a little bit.
Sure.
Because I know you are the chief medical officer, so let's talk about how people can find out about it. What is it, and what's your involvement there?
Okay, so Body Logic MD is a network of highly trained physicians. We are actually the most highly trained physicians in this area, in this space. We have about 60 doctors across the country in about 40 or so practices, and we really are in most locations, most major metros, and we have doctors who are trained exactly like I am, who believe exactly in all of the stuff we've been talking about today and treat their patients with bioidentical hormones. They help guide them in lifestyle change. They look at detoxification patterns and all of the things we've been talking about today. And I am responsible for education standards, training standards. I train every doctor who enters Body Logic MD. And I arrange all kinds of continuing medical education seminars for the doctors in Body Logic MD. And I do a lot of continuing medical education for doctors generally at conferences and things like that. And it really is just, I call the doctors in Body Logic MD my brain trust of the most brilliant physicians on the planet, because they're an excellent network for each other as well. You know, more than, you know, of course they're wonderful for their patients, and we do have about 15,000 patients nationwide, and we're growing every year. And but they're such a great support for me as well, because doctors who do what we do, we're really, like you said, this is cutting edge medicine. This is the future of medicine, and it's great to have other doctors out there doing what I'm doing and supporting one another, and they're really just an excellent network of people to work with, and like I said, the smartest doctors I've ever met anywhere.
Well, I just want to tell our listeners that they can find out more by just going to Body Logic, that's BodyLogicMD.com. And there's a whole website there, and I believe your book's there. Of course, your book is also widely available. I've seen it on Amazon.com, The Sex Drive Solution for Women, and other places where people can get more information about this, because you have to be empowering. And I find that if you take some of this evidence-based information or Dr. Jen's book with you to your OBGYN, it's very possible that it would open their mind to learning about some of these techniques, especially what I find with many MDs, Dr. Jen, and you may as well, when it does affect them or their teenage daughter who's suffering with PMS, or if they're a doctor, especially a woman doctor or a man doctor who's starting to get older and get some of these symptoms themselves and see that just the conventional drug approach really is not helpful, that often opens up their mind. And when they see some of the great research that you share and the fact that you are so highly trained, you know, that can make them more open to looking at the natural solution.
That's absolutely true, Ellen. All of the doctors that I mentioned in BodyLogic MD, they've all come from conventional medicine backgrounds. And the way so many of us get into this newer area of medicine is by being frustrated with our own situation and how we really lack the tools that we need in conventional medicine to treat ourselves the way that we would like to be treated. And then we get exposed somehow to this functional medicine model and really realize how evidence-based it is and how this really is the cutting edge and the future of medicine, looking at all of the evidence that's available. And that's the way so many doctors come into this specialty of medicine and wind up entering the BodyLogic MD network.
And it is certainly growing. I think it's growing in popularity, and it's just a force that cannot be stopped because it is the truth. And there is help. That's the good news, that people can change. They don't have to just accept their symptoms or just say, oh, well, you know, that's the end of my sex life. And along with the sex, of course, is energy, feelings of vibrancy, excitement for life, et cetera.
Absolutely. I always talk about it as mojo, you know, because I think of the sexual health as a barometer for our health in general in a lot of ways, because we talked about how sexuality is all about blood flow. Well, the health of your cardiac vessels, for example, is all about blood flow as well. And if you're not getting good blood flow to the genitals, odds are you're not getting good blood flow to your heart either. So if you're feeling lethargic, if you're feeling kind of tapped out, overwhelmed, can't sleep at night, having all of these different symptoms, mood issues, odds are not only do you feel poorly, but you're actually not healthy. And I think that's something that people really have to wrap their heads around. And to feel their best, to look their best, they're going to have to feel their best. To feel their best, they're really going to have to make a lot of times lifestyle changes that are going to bring their hormones into order and consider hormone replacement therapy. But, you know, as we sort of have emphasized here, you can really bring your hormones into better balance just through supplements, herbs, and nutrition, and not necessarily going to hormone replacement therapy, although hormone replacement therapy can be a really big help. And the one other thing that we didn't really touch on too much, but it should be obvious by now, that exercise is a huge, huge part of this as well, that you really can't feel your best, look your best, and not have your best sexuality without really engaging in a regular exercise routine.
I so agree, and I so much want to thank you for being our guest today on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And again, we have been speaking today with the author of The Sex Drive Solution, Dr. Jen. Her name is Dr. Jennifer Landa, L-A-N-D-A, M-D. And you can find her at BodyLogicMD.com. There's no S, by the way. It's not BodyLogic. It's BodyLogicMD.com. And we were talking about Dr. Jen's power plan to fire up your libido and your overall health and wellness. So until next time, this is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse, at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse, hoping that you rev up your drive and stay healthy.